Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. You must listen to the open loops, a theme park for absurd beliefs and systems of integration between the mind and the creative spirit. Open loops.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Open Loops with Greg Bornstein, Conversations That Bend. A theme park for your intellect and imagination. A place for escapist intellectuals and intellectual escapists. What is an open loop? Well, we'll get to that in a second. You see, this is a late night talk show for your unconscious mind. And really, what I'm trying to do on this show, well, let me tell you who I am. My name is Greg Bornstein. I'm a transformational entertainer, a other-than-conscious thought leader, a curator of experience, and my gosh, I am shamelessly fringe. What does that all mean? It means I'm a looper. My goal is to shake you out of your everyday reality. Yes, I, along with several guests, are here to challenge your existing belief systems with radically unique ideas designed to stimulate your unconscious mind and ultimately have you step into the highest version of yourself. Yes, an open loop is just that. It's an unconscious provocation. It's the dot, dot, dot. When I said, "What is an open loop?" and didn't answer, that was me opening a loop. We on this show are going to dive into all sorts of different things, magic, hypnosis, spirituality, anything weird, anything out there, anything that makes you just have to know more. Well, that's what this show's about. Thank you for being here. Victoria Shaw is my guest today. Yes, someone that I definitely, definitely needed to know more about because she said, "I am a psychic psychotherapist." Yeah. What? Now look, something on this show I talk about a lot is, why the magic? Why does it have to go there? Isn't it good enough to just work with people, help out their mental illnesses, whatever that means, whether that's just regular anxiety or depression? You know, do you need to bring in all the angels and stuff like that? But that said, Victoria Shaw has a story that makes you believe it wouldn't be possible to ignore those other factors. She's done the research into psi phenomena. She comes from a very, very well-established educational background, was doing psychotherapy, and she had enough experiences, enough tangible evidence to her that made her pivot into being an intuitive counselor. We talk about all the edges of belief and skepticism in this show. Victoria is a wonderful spirit, a wonderful soul. I love talking to her. You're going to love it as well. And if you enjoy Open Loops, hey, share it with your friends. Share it with your siblings. Share it with your dad who abandoned you. That way you won't even need to go to any form of therapist. You know. Also, hey, if you like the show, please give it a rating in Apple Podcasts. Leave a review. Even a word can help. Just get this out there. Always very helpful. Now look, Victoria Shaw is here to, well, transform your beliefs about the way the mind and intuition work. You ready for it?
Thank you.
Victoria Shaw joins us, a psychic psychotherapist, intuitive. She runs all sorts of different programs. You could work with her one-on-one. You could take classes with her. You can listen to her podcast. She has a lot of insight. She has a lot of truth about you to share with you that maybe you don't even know in yourself, which is exciting to me. Victoria, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really, really excited.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited to talk with you about your journey. I always wonder about people that blend the worlds together of psychology and spirituality. I know people, there was a woman I was quite familiar with. she told me she would always have psychic flashes when she was working with patients and stuff like that, but she never went all the way in. How did you go towards that place where you were really balancing both sides of what some might consider science versus a little bit more mysterious, a little bit more ethereal?
I love that question. That is such a great question. So I was definitely a scientist first, but my passion has always been in psychology and understanding the mind and consciousness and like really those big, big questions, you know. And I wanted to study neuroscience. I was a philosophy major as well in college. And all of these things led me to get my PhD in psychology, which I did. And I studied research psychology and the mind and the brain and all of these things. And I got to the end of my doctorate and my passion was gone because I realized that the answers to the big questions that, you know, were burning in my soul were not to be found, at least not at this point in time, in research psychology. And so with a little bit of a broken heart, I left the field. I took some time off to raise my family, but the seeking and that deeper desire never went away. And what happened to me, I sort of stumbled on the whole woo path, probably, you know, not, I don't believe in accidents, but at the time it felt sort of accidental. I had this pediatrician that, you know, my kids went to. And again, he was somebody, you know, an MD, very well respected, very well known in private practice in New York, but also really, really open-minded and really just not afraid to just be who he was and really go out of the box when the situation called for it. And he just hooked me up with, you know, it started off with an acupuncturist who is also a medical intuitive, and then an osteopath to work on my back who was also a psychic. And it just kept happening. And all of these people kept saying to me, "You're so intuitive. You're so intuitive. What are you going to do with this? What are you going to do with this?" And finally, I listened. And so every step that I've taken since I awakened my intuition and since I opened up into this other world has been primarily guided by that. But the cool thing is that the more I've tuned into my intuition and the more I've opened up these other gifts, I find that it's reignited my passion in the science. And it's reignited and kind of connects with everything that I studied and cared about and knew when I was in my more science mind. And so for me, they're not really like two different things. There's not really a dichotomy. The dichotomy is just in the way that our society has taught us that science is different than spirituality. But for me, those things completely line up. They completely make sense. And I can often find the science to back up whatever I get intuitively. And I think that's a really magical thing as well. So does that answer your question?
It does. And it makes me want examples.
Okay.
I'm very curious of a case of someone you worked with that the spiritual really pointed towards the research psychological side of it.
Right. Well, you know, first of all, just psychic phenomenon in general, tons of good research for that, really good research and stronger research than a lot of the stuff that I did when I was getting my PhD in Princeton, meaning the effect sizes and the reliability of this stuff is amazing. All right. And I've published papers and stuff.
So are you talking about the name in the industry I know is Dean Radin?
Yes.
He's very big in saying that, yes, the mind can absolutely influence reality, doing test studies, doing double blind research and making sure that his research is legit. And he's one of these people that he's the head of Noetic Sciences.
Okay. And Daryl Bem at Cornell did work on precognition. So the ability that actually everybody has to predict the future, at least in a limited way, and also in telepathy. So
Tell me about that research a little bit. That's fascinating.
So I don't have all the details in front of me, but Daryl Bem, who is a memory researcher, in fact, I know one of his students because I worked with her at Princeton. But after we were all done with that, I believe the research was done in the 90s, but I could be wrong about that. He did a lot of research on precognition and research on telepathy. And I believe the precognitive research, but I could get it wrong, goes something like this. Let me try to remember. I wrote this down for another podcast, so I should remember. It's the fact that,
It's totally fine.
No, what he did is he did, showed people how to rehearse, like do associations for memory, let's say. I'm not going to get it 100% correct, but I'm going to get close. And so he said, like, you know, if you say, look at a bunch of words and those words are associated with something, right, you're going to remember them better. But what he actually did was that he found that he tested the people first and then he had them do this memory trick and they still got the same effect. So the studying that happened afterwards actually affected, right, their ability. So they already had some understanding of these words. So I will get you some details on that because I still might have gotten that right, but it's fascinating and it's replicatable, amazing research. But that's not even the question you asked me. So I can get back to the question that you asked.
Well, now I want to know about your research too. I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And my research was pretty straightforward. I was doing a lot of different things. My first love was studying unconscious memory and how we can remember things that we are not conscious that we know and how it's called implicit memory. And again, a lot of that is just all the knowledge and information that we have that's beneath our conscious knowing, but that factors into how we understand and process all the information in our worlds and in our lives. And I also think that psychic information, though it's not quite that, it comes from that same place a lot of times where we're picking up stuff all the time because we're all multisensory beings. Yeah. And so we're picking up all these things all the time. Some of it is just stuff that we've been conditioned to learn. And some of it's like the real deal, you know, from your spirit, which is where I think psychic phenomenon comes from. You don't have to, but I do. And all of that's happening below the scene. And what you become aware of is just the tip of the iceberg. So that was a big part of my research.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. This is very heavy stuff, which I love. Okay, fine. We might get back to that. Let's hope we do. Let's go back to the original question, which is an example of someone you've worked with where this has definitely been at play.
Right. And so I always lead with my intuition because what I have learned is that it's when I follow that, it's always right. It's always the gold. And so I lead with my intuition and then I let my intuition tell me, you know, what tools to use, what diagnosis to make, what approach to take. Because when I fall into the intuition first, then my, you know, logical mind, which is, you know, I have a lot of information in there. I have a lot of advanced degrees and a lot of knowing. My intuition can pull that information out for me. It can guide me. It can show me. And so often we do it in reverse, right? We think that we have to think our way through everything, but I like to think of the mind as the tool that my deeper, higher knowing uses. So I'll give you an example of a client that I had years ago who on the phone in the first phone call, she was telling me that, you know, I'm coming for support. My daughter needs support. I need support. She's really sick. It's been, you know, a really hard 18 months. You know, we were all really traumatized from her illness. And all I could think about, you know, the whole time was this mom was sick as a child. When she was sick as a child, it was a very traumatic experience. And part of her trauma was how she was approaching her daughter right now. And she needed support with that so that she could separate those two things. And this was early in my work. So now I'm pretty honest about that. I do both things. But back then I was working for someone else. I was getting my licensing hours. So I wasn't always totally, you know, open about that. But I knew. And so in the first intake, I was able to use that knowing to probe and to ask her some questions about her illness as a child, or was there an illness as a child? And it turned out to be, you know, incredibly, it was an accurate intuition, and it was incredibly fruitful to, you know, go down that road. And it was helpful for both her and her daughter.
So you've done this sort of thing enough times for you to go, this isn't just I wouldn't say coincidence. I would say, well, this is the thing. And I'm wondering this as an actor. I always heard when I was getting acting training that actors are very intuitive people. And it never got to the realm of psychic when they meant it. Certainly there was, even I studied at the Stella Adler Studio of Acting when I was at NYU. And even at that school, they talked about Stella being very into Carl Jung and collective unconscious and all that stuff. So yes, it's a little bit there, but in terms of just being intuitive and understanding and just having a sense of things, what's the difference between someone that is naturally empathetic and can quote unquote read someone's mind versus someone like you that is reading people's minds?
All right. That is such a good question. First of all, everyone is intuitive. So we all may be using it for different things, and we all may have different strengths and weaknesses, right? A lot of actors do. They have that ability to tune into the character, to tune into the emotions of others, to tune into maybe that collective unconsciousness to find, right? To really tune into, you know, who you are trying to portray and really feel into that. I think that's an intuitive gift, 1,000%. Obviously, I do things a little bit different, and I've worked on this a really long time and really honed my craft so that the information that comes through for me is information that can be relevant, important to my clients and to the, you know, their healing journey and the counseling journey and the work that I do. So I really think it's more apples and oranges and how our intuition speaks to us and how we use it. Everybody has it. It's just a matter of opening yourself up to allowing that it's there and then learning how to make it work for you.
That's interesting. Do you believe that there's a world where intuitive doesn't have to mean psychic?
You know, I use the terms interchangeably because yeah. I'm really comfortable with both words. I think a lot of people have gone to the word intuitive for a couple of reasons. Number one, to stress that idea that everybody has it, to make contact with those normal kinds of experiences that we all have, like, you know, feeling into things, having a gut feeling, knowing who's going to be on the phone before, you know, you pick it up, that kind of thing, which are sort of more normal experiences most people have that, you know, are not quite psychic, which would be people like talking to dead people and seeing auras. I mean, that's a little more out there.
Yeah.
But I really think that they're just, it's really just the same thing. And, you know, intuition just normalizes it a little bit more. I also love the term multisensory because that's another way of sort of explaining it, right? We have our five senses, but we also are multisensory energy beings. And so there's so much that we're picking up all the time, every single human being. And now but we've just been, you know, taught to put the shutters over our eyeballs and not see it, not take that in, because we haven't been taught that, you know, it's something we're supposed to be paying attention to. But we are picking it up all the time. We're probably acting on it and responding to it all the time. And so part of learning to leverage the power of your intuition is just learning how to do what you're already doing anyway, a little bit more consciously and a lot more intentionally.
Yeah. Yeah, I like this answer a lot. It also makes me wonder about how I sense a humility with you, which I am not necessarily not that I wasn't expecting it, though you have so many things going on, and it seems that you've really made a practice for yourself and a living doing this work, that I'm going, oh yeah, it seems like enough people are very happy to work with Victoria, that she's really made enough difference in people's lives, where I would imagine you could, if you wanted to, get away with being the person that, yep, see, I told you, I got that hit. Grandmother named Rose, yep, and that's another one that showbiz, see, is it, because that's what I think psychics often, at least that's really when people tune into psychics, when they just nail it every time and they nail it so specifically. But you're not doing that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big fan of, you know, humility. I'm a big fan of, I think we should all have a lot of that, right? Because especially if you're in a healing or helping field, you don't want to take people's power away by telling them, you know, more than they do. And I always tell people, I'm getting your guidance for you. You know this on some level, just sometimes it helps to hear it out of someone else's mouth. And, you know, that's, I really believe that. And of course I know things, I have degrees and I share that stuff too, but really, you know, we're all just walking each other home. And, but I also think that, you know, there are people out there that have really honed their craft and their mission and purpose is a little different than mine. It's really to be out there and to prove that this stuff exists, right? Yes. So a lot of mediums to prove that life exists, that life continues after we die and that our spirit still is around, and psychics to, you know, show all sorts of phenomenon. And I think that that's wonderful and beautiful. I think that there are a lot of people on the planet right now that still need that reassurance that, you know, they need their mind stretched in that direction that maybe they don't believe. And I'm totally in awe of the people that do that work. I would say 99% of the people that come to me are already believers. So it's a little bit easier for me because I, you know, they may not know that I know how to do it. And, you know, so there's a little of that to get the sense of, am I the right person for them? And is this helpful for them? Sure. But there are very few people that, you know, come into my office wanting to test my psychic powers. And I am grateful for that.
Have you ever? What happens when they do?
My favorite story is when I first started doing this years ago, I thought it would be a really good idea to do that. I had a networking group I was a part of, and a friend did this thing called Psychic Sundays. So people would show up and they would, you know, for $20 a pop, they could do all these different healers and people. And I thought, well, this will be good for me to hone my craft. I'm going to do the Psychic Sunday. And one lady, and most people were lovely and really, you know, open. And it was actually a magical day. But one lady came in and she clearly wanted to, you know, prove or disprove or whatever. She was definitely challenging me. And so she asked me, usually people just want guidance and you get what comes through. And I always tell that people, you know, see what fits for you. But she asked me, she sits down in front of me and she asks me, okay, what do I do for a living? So I'm like, okay, let me tune in and I'll see if I can figure out what you do for a living. And I kind of tuned in and I was like, you know, it seems to me something that's like a cross between like a nurse and like a school teacher and like a secretary. And she just looks at me like with this, you know, totally like, yeah, whatever, you're a fraud. And then, I go, well, what do you do? And she goes, you're a nanny. She goes, I'm a nanny rather. And I was like, I think I got that really close. Like I was so proud of myself. So again, you know, it's like, I was okay with it.
It's still coming through.
Absolutely. I thought I killed it, to be honest, but that's okay. She didn't. And that is totally fine because we all have free will and we all, you know, but I'm grateful to be one that in most of my work, I do get to preach mostly to the choir. And, that's kind of how I like to be.
Yeah. 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 I notice you also do other forms of spiritual guidance in the sense that you do energy healing work and past life readings. How does that play into when someone works with you? Is that again, another thing where you're with them and you're going, I think that this is going to be a past life thing? Or do people ever come to you and say, hey, look, forget all the crappy sappy. I need to reconcile stuff with my father. I want to know, was I a soldier in the Civil War? you know, what happens there?
You know, it's both. My favorite way to work. And, you know, some people do come to me just for counseling and they don't know everything that I do. So I'm also, most of my clients are pretty open-minded, but I'm very respectful. So if a past life was to come up for a client that wasn't open to that, I would find another way to work it in. But usually what happens is I tune into my intuition at the beginning of every session. I set the energy. I ask for the highest guidance to come through. And then I usually just follow the thread of what comes to me. And sometimes clients will come in with a list of questions or a list of things that they want to work on. Sometimes they will come with a specific request, like, Have I had a past life? My fate. One time someone asked me if they'd had a past life in their family line. And I was so grateful for that one too, because I gave them this whole reading and I was horrified because none of it made sense to me. And it seemed like completely discombobulated. And then after the reading, you know, he was like, he liked it. He was like, did you Google my name? And I was like, no, but I will now. And I did. And it all kind of made sense. So that was really, really cool and validating. But that's not what usually happens. What usually happens is someone's working on something and a past life will just, it'll come through. And I'll just, you know, I'll get an image or a vision of something that's clearly not the person in their body now. And I'll follow that thread and I'll share what I'm getting. And usually it's deeply meaningful for them.
Yeah. Wow. I feel that could be sometimes such a risky thing to bring up in a session. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, I usually know my audience and I also trust that the information that comes through will be the right information in the right words at the right time for my client. And I would say 85 to 95%, you know, it lands well. And even when it doesn't land well, I kind of usually just trust the process that sometimes, you know, we want to not do harm and we want people to usually feel better when they leave than when they came. But, you know, sometimes it's going to land how it's going to land.
Yeah. Yeah. I was also going to ask about just thinking as someone that this is, I'll let some people behind the curtain here. There was a well-known hypnotist named Gerald Kine. And okay. He said, he was teaching hypnotherapy trainers. And he said, you know, look, back in the day, there was a family that they were very into Judaism and believed in it. And I just knew that the hypnosis for the specific issue was going to work more if they thought I was Jewish. So I showed up with a yarmulke and
came in
and did the session and had effective results. And that's one of the principles of hypnosis from the work that hypnotherapists do. They will raise expectation up a bit to play into what the person needs. So I'm sitting here going, well, you know what, Victoria kind of has a lot of room here, because if you, and I don't think you are this, but if someone were to come to you and say, yeah, I have no idea why I'm angry all the time and there's nothing in my parents, I can't trace it to childhood trauma, I can't remember this, someone that might not be fully, I don't know, pure of heart might say, no, of course you don't, because this is actually a previous life coming through. Yeah. It's a previous life coming through. A grandparent, a great grandparent. There was a big trauma. It was that kind of pivot, which
right.
I don't feel like you've ever had to do, but I do wonder if that just having the, I wonder how you would respond to criticism that the fact that you can go beyond what's here in the material realm, the regular reality, the waking life, gives you a cushion to get to roots of issue more.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, first of all, we're never really going to know what's going on behind the veil, you know, on the other side of the veil. We get glimpses of it, we get ideas of it, but, you know, there's something about being human that limits the way that we understand things. Even when we have that great expanded multisensory awareness, there's always going to be things that we don't understand with our conceptual minds. And personally, I'm cool with that. I like and enjoy that, you know, cooperation with my higher self that sees it all, and understanding that my human self, you know, I'll get peeks through the blindfold, but I'm not all knowing and I'm not supposed to be.
But I love it. I love the humility.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it's important. And it would be silly if I said otherwise, or don't, you know, if anyone says otherwise, please, you know, run the other way. But I also think, sure, you know, having this perspective, it's broader. And so, you know, it just gives us more of a bird's eye perspective of what's going on in our human life. And I think that's why people are drawn to me and the work that I do and the work that people like me do. Because when we're in, you know, human form, we tend to get lost in the details. We tend to get lost in the drama. We tend to get lost in the pain. And when we can zoom out and see the bigger picture, you know, everything gets easier. It gets clearer. We reconnect with like our deeper purpose and, you know, all the gifts of our soul. And then we can start to bring that here on earth into our daily lives. And that's where things get really magical.
Huh.
And You know, I also say when I first started opening up my intuition, right? And again, you know, Ivy League trained psychologist here. And I first am doing things like talking to spirit guides and re-experiencing my own past lives because that happened. You know, I thought to myself, well, you could be going insane. But the thing was, my life was getting better in miraculous ways. And fortunately, the people in my life, my family, my kids, the people close to me were all telling me, wow, you know, I don't know what you're doing, but keep doing it. They liked me a lot better. I'll just say that. So I had that validation, what was great. But that was great. So at the end of the day, I decided, well, if this is what losing my mind looks like, I'm going for it because this is such a better way to live. And so yeah. I think the proof is in the pudding, right? You know, when someone comes into my office and they feel better when they walk out of my office, I like to think that if a past life came through or guidance came through or your grandma Pat came through, that that's a real thing. And, you know, I've had so many of these experiences and so much validating feedback. I'm kind of confident that it usually is. But at the end of the day, do you really care if it gets the job done?
That's yeah. Well, neither did Gerald Kine. I mean, it worked. And also, I don't think he was being deliberately deceptive. I thought he just knew that, hey, look, you know what? This is going to work for this group of people.
Yeah.
And yes, it is different than what you're describing. I do wonder, what is the most magical thing that happened with you? What made you think you were losing your mind?
No, I mean, it was just, you know, I was literally having dialogues with, like, you know, guides in spirit form and they were answering me, right? So again, left brain going,
What do you remember the day that happened? The moment?
It was gradual. It was definitely gradual and it was intentional. And, you know, I can look back and see as a child in my imaginative play, I was talking to the same guides all the time. I just, you know, kids are allowed to do that. Adults aren't. That's the only difference. And so oftentimes we shut it down. And, you know, that imagination space is often, you know, another way that we really do connect with our intuition. That's, again, why an actor, you know, is so intuitive. It's the same muscle. It's the same place.
I'm so fascinated by this worldview because in a way you're making it, and I don't want to misunderstand you fully, but it almost sounds as if anybody ever had an imaginary friend, that actually may have been a spirit guide.
So I got a great story. I had a client come to me and I think they really just told me this story for validation, but it was so cool. Their son had an imaginary friend. And he called the imaginary friend Baby. And for many, many, you know, a couple years, you know, Baby had to have a spot at the table. Baby had to be strapped in his car seat next to their son, et cetera, et cetera. And then one day they asked, well, what's Baby's name? And they gave, and his son gave the name of Baby. And, you know, full body chills, tears, because the name of Baby was a miscarriage that they had had and named prior to when he was born. And as soon as he delivered the message of Baby's name, he never saw Baby again.
Oh, wow. Wow. That is very interesting.
Right.
That, yeah, I'm spiraling in my head thinking about what that means in terms of the imaginary friends. I don't remember. I mean, perhaps you have a different view on this. If I were to start creating an imaginary friend that I was going to talk to right now as an adult, what are the chances that that's actually a spirit guide showing up for me?
I would do it with the intention of connecting with the spirit guide. I would do it with the highest intention, meaning I want someone to add value to my life. I don't want to do it so I can be powerful and cool and say I have a spirit guide, right? I really want to connect for good, clear, high vibing purposes, and then go to town. Because again, you know, our guidance will present to us however we want to envision them. They will meet us where we're at. And that space of imagination is the space of creation and the space of freeing ourselves from that small mind that tells us how things have to be and move into the mind and the space of where, you know, all possibilities and potentialities. And yes, our spirit guides can easily meet us in that place. And if that's how you imagine them, I'd go with it.
That's interesting. You are making me question why adults don't have imaginary friends now.
Yeah, I do. I have a lot of them and people pay me money to talk to them.
Wow. That's that's very interesting. Yeah, going back to your psychology degree and Ivy League education and all that stuff, what is happening for the here's what I'm wondering. I'm sure you have colleagues and people that you went to school with that might say, hey, wait a minute, you were in school. You know what delusions are, don't you, Victoria?
I do.
So what's the difference? What would you tell them?
I love that question. So I was recently a participant in a study at Yale. And the study wanted to know the difference between people that heard voices, i.e. spirit guides or guidance, but in hearing form, versus people that heard voices that were schizophrenic or had, you know, psychosis or delusions. And I participated in a bunch of rounds of this study. And what their hypothesis was and what they are starting to recognize is that people that hear voices as part of psychosis feel like those voices are persecuting them, feel like they can't control the voices, feel overwhelmed by the voices, feel out of control. Whereas psychics who identify as being clairaudient, meaning they hear their guidance, the voices are helping their lives. They're in control of them. They're not afraid of them. It's a value add to their life, et cetera, et cetera. And that's what I think the difference is, right? When we feel overwhelmed, when the information coming through it, or, you know, the way that we're seeing the world, if we can't incorporate that, if we can't interpret that, if we can't function with that, then that's more along the lines of a mental illness kind of issue. Whereas if it is something that is enhancing your life, if you function better in reality because you have these connections, if you are grounded in reality or can be grounded in reality when you need to be, right? Then I say, go for it. And I really think that's the main difference is it enhancing your life or is it causing you problems? I think that's it.
You've definitely opened my mind to this notion before of the positive versus negative in a way that makes me go, is that too simple? It feels simple that positive means they're real versus psychosis means they're negative. Right. Is there any subtlety in that? I mean, they say everything's on a spectrum these days. Right. Could there be something that's a positive psychosis?
Maybe. I think, yeah, I'm sure there's gray areas and I'm sure there's areas in people that have a psychotic break, you know, just like people that take hallucinogens and they have a spiritual and a religious experience. And then, you know, hopefully the hallucinogens wear off and they can carry that into their life, right? But I'm sure there's people that have what seems like profoundly, you know, spiritual psychotic breaks as well. And again, it's just a matter of, can you also function and how do you integrate that into your life? And, you know, I think too, that I have had this experience. Sometimes people that are hearing voices in a not healthy way, this isn't really my population, but I have seen it happen. And I've even read about it even more from other psychics and mediums. But some psychics will say, if you go into, you know, a mental hospital where a lot of people are, you know, in the midst of strong psychotic breaks, you will sometimes see who they are talking to in spirit form. So again, it's just a matter of if it's helping you or not, not trying to freak you out, but you know, right? They may actually be seeing something that is quote unquote real, but again, it's not helping them.
Yeah.
And they're not able to interpret it and use that, you know, in a way that's helpful.
Okay. Look, I need help right now.
Okay.
How do I do it? How would I wake up right now? How would I start seeing these things? How would I really be able to see what's beyond the veil? What's your immediate advice?
That's awesome. I mean, the first thing is, look, everyone's going to have different experiences and it's based on what you believe is possible, you know, how you're wired, what you're comfortable with, all of that. Like, I particularly don't like to see stuff. That freaks me out. So I mostly hear my guides, sense my guides. I don't want to like wake up in the middle of the night and see something hovering over my bed. Like that is not. So that's part of it too, right? But really it's start small. First thing, and I teach intuition development all the time. It's one of my favorite things to do. The first thing I always tell people is just start by setting the intention. Say, hey, this is something I want to do. This is something I want to explore more. This is something I'm open to cultivating and connecting with more in my life. Because first of all, you're already intuitive. Everybody is. It's happening all the time. Remember that. And so it's really about getting more conscious with it, more aware of it, right? It's already happening. You're just learning how to tap in and use it. Okay. That's number one. And as soon as you make that agreement to start to connect with your intuition, you're going to start seeing it everywhere because it's happening all the time. Second of all, intention is really powerful too, because we are mind, body, spirit beings, and we are everything's energy. And where you direct your energy is what you create. So if you are focused on and have that intention to bring more intuition into your life, you will attract it. You'll attract those experiences. You'll attract the people that you need to help you on your journey. So that is another really great reason to really start by setting that intention. And then it's just about noticing, starting to notice, how does my intuition speak to me? And oftentimes it's really simple, a gut feeling or the chills when something resonates or a thought that pops into your head. And, you know, you follow it and you're like, oh my gosh, that's the answer to the question. Or you feel drawn to call someone at a particular time and they have an answer for you, or that, you know, you find out that they needed you. Or, I mean, I could go on and on and on and on. You know, I interviewed for my podcast a medium that gets all of her messages is Disney movies and song lyrics.
Wow.
So, you know, I know, it's really cute.
Wait,
does she
advertise that?
She does.
She's the Disney medium?
I think she rebranded, but and I was interviewed her right around the rebrand. But yeah, she was known as the singing medium because all of her guidance would come in the form of song lyrics.
Oh, and I have to talk to that person.
Yeah, amazing. she's really fun. I'll give you that name after, but, but a lot of people get guidance that way. She's not unique. I mean, I get song lyrics. It happened to me today in a session that we were talking about something with a longtime client, and an Indigo Girls song, The Watershed, came into my brain. And I was like, is this a watershed moment for you? And she's like, I think it is. But if you hadn't have said that, I wouldn't have really tuned in and seen, you know, I would have kept going and I wouldn't have paused and said, wow, what just happened is really important.
Yeah.
So, you know, I pay attention to all of those signs. And, you know, once we start paying attention, we will see that it is happening all the time.
Well, the thing is, Victoria, I am constantly chasing, sometimes chasing to a bad degree, an unhealthy degree. I guess maybe chasing is not the right word. I am always hoping, strongly hoping, that I can get to a place of creative flow in conversations, in my ideas, in having the next new idea, here's what an episode of this podcast could be. Here's right. What I could do with hypnosis next. And when those moments of inspiration hit, I'm going, yeah, that feels good. This feels like the right place to be in, where the creativity just comes together.
Yep.
How does that relate to this?
Oh, it totally relates to this. So the way that I see it is, intuition comes from that space of no mind. It comes from that the space between our thoughts, objects, right? And that's the same thing where the flow comes from, right? It's where you get out of your own way, you just surrender, and then beautiful things work through you. So when I teach intuition development, what I often teach people is, I mean, I'll teach you tools and tricks and strategies and stuff like that, because why not? And that's what people like, because that's how we've learned that we're supposed to learn. But really, yeah, what I teach first and foremost, and this will work for you too, is just how to create the conditions where your intuition is most likely to shine. Right. And when you learn to create those conditions, then it just does what it's always here to do, and it happens and flows more naturally. And so I would say the same thing for you in terms of finding the creative flow. You set the conditions. And of course, you already know this, but I'm going to tell you again anyway, one of the conditions for finding the flow is to not chase it. Right? You have to fall into it. You have to let it be there. You have to allow that sometimes it's here and sometimes it's not. And I always say, have some good stuff to do when it's not flowing, so you can keep yourself busy until it starts again.
Yeah. Yeah, you do have a lot of, I'm very fascinated by this $25 course that you teach. It's pretty good, right? The Journey of Your Soul, Understanding Reincarnation. You know, without giving the juice inside of this course, I am curious about souls planning our lifetimes before we're born. If God supposedly, if you can't play, you know, God doesn't play dice or whatever that phrase is, and yeah. God's laughing if you, you know, try to plan something, all these phrases, then why are the souls planning our lifetimes? What are their plans about?
All right. So again, I don't want to step on anybody's cosmology or religion, because everyone's going to understand things differently. But what I understand is that, you know, there's one source, God, divine, however you want to put it. And if you look at it like the sun, we are all rays of that sun. So your soul is just part of that bigger thing, right? You are not just that bigger thing, but you are a part of it. You are a ray of light coming from the one divine source. Okay. That's your soul. And that at the end of the day, there's just one thing. And so everything's always in perfect harmony and working together. And, but, you know, from our individuated perspectives, we don't always see it that way. And so if you look at it that way, does that make it a little easier to understand how your soul or your higher self would plan a lifetime? Or do I need to keep going?
Keep going.
Okay. So it's my understanding too, right? That we're all souls, right? In, yeah. You know, we're having a bunch of different experiences. And by the way, the human realm is not the only experience that your soul might choose to have, but that's the one that's relevant for our conversation today, because this is where we find ourselves now. But so before you come into a human body, and most of us live in quite a few of those human bodies, because we learn through experience and we learn through having multiple different experiences through different human perspectives, your soul has a plan and it thinks about, okay, in your soul, your higher self, your guidance, maybe all the way up to God, the idea is, okay, what can be gained from this activity of experiencing human life? And so you sit down with your guides and you sit down with your higher self and you make a plan. And the plan is not set in stone. It's sort of like, I love to use the analogy of like an improv. Yeah. Where you have, you know, oftentimes you know the major players. You probably know who your major romantic partners are going to be. You almost definitely know who your parents are going to be. You sometimes know who your children are going to be. I mean, you usually know all of these things. And you know some of the touch point moments of that lifetime that you are hoping to learn and grow from, because everything in life happens for us, not to us. And it's all for our learning, growth, and believe it or not, enjoyment. Your spirit thinks this is a hoot, and that's why it keeps doing it. And so you know some of that, but again, it's an improv, right? So I'm sure you've done improvisational, acting, right? It's once you get in there, you don't know what's going to happen. You have the basic idea, but you have free will. And so you learn as you go along. And so that's really what soul planning is about. It's about planning those parameters, you know, that we want to set in place. And then we hop into our bodies and we, you know, feel our way through our lives.
So what happens if someone says, hey, look, Victoria, I get that my soul has a plan, but here's what I'm going to do right now. I am going to scope out the plan for my touch points for the rest of my life. I'm going to do it right now. I suppose as I'm talking to you, as I'm realizing the obvious answer will be, yeah, that's what your soul is telling you. You're meant to rebel against me right now. Is that the simple answer to that? You have no choice.
First of all, you are your soul. That's who you really are, and everything else. Excuse me. And everything else is just illusion, and it's just confusion, and it's all good, because that confusion is part and parcel of the human experience. But you are your soul, and your soul is always on board, even when, you know, it feels like you're two separate things. But yeah, like there are times when we hear our guidance and, you know, we follow it in the lifetime. And then there's times when, you know, we get a little lost and a little confused and a little bit rebellious, and all of it is fine, because all of it is part of life. And for me, having that deeper connection with my higher self and my spirit and setting the intention to live, you know, more of a divinely aligned life, it definitely makes things so much easier. And it definitely brings meaning to places that, you know, would have just been awful before. But, you know, it's a process. Everyone's in a different place in this process. And, you know, we're all human. We get to be human. Honor your humanness. And just, you know, if you can just walk away from this conversation knowing that there's a higher plan and that at some point in time, your higher self was a part of that, then you can start to understand that, you know, life is happening for you, not to you. And when you start to get lost and overwhelmed and think, you know, WTF, you can just hold that little bit of faith that there's just a higher purpose here.
Yeah, I'm definitely, I very much love this perspective. Have you ever worked with someone and you actually lay out the soul plan in front of them?
You know, I don't work exactly like that, although I know there are mediums that do, and they, you know, will envision the whole thing and give it to you. And Robert Schwartz, who has written the book, Your Soul's Gift, I think, and Your Soul's Plan, he does hypnotic regression sessions around this. And I actually bought one for my husband a few years back for his 50th birthday, and he loved it.
Really?
But for me, yeah.
Is he into all this stuff?
Yeah, he, you know, I don't know if he's all in like I am, but yeah, he totally supports what I do. And he actually was someone who remembered past lifetimes before I even believed in them. So fun fact there, because he would have, you know, dreams, and he had prophetic dreams as a child too. So yeah, he's definitely open. But for me, what happens is I will just get glimmers of things. And so I will often see in a session, like the moment in another lifetime where someone chose to have the experience they're having now, because there are these moments sometimes when we have intense pain or intense, it's usually curiosity where we want to know something and understand something. And then boom, that gets directed into our next life or a future life. And I will also sometimes, because again, that role of counselor means that a lot of people come to me not when they're at the happiest point in their life, but because they're experiencing a struggle.
Yeah.
And, you know, so oftentimes that guidance will come in and give us some perspective on that struggle. What, you know, is your spirit wanting to learn or grow or understand through what's happening now? So that kind of information and perspective when people are open to it can be so powerful. So yeah, I get that information all the time for people.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's what I need to know. I imagine you do these sessions all for people all over the world now.
Yes.
Okay. But you're based in Westport, Connecticut?
I am based in Westport, Connecticut. Yes.
Okay. Were you originally working for that clientele? I need to know about the Westport people. Are the Westport people buying into this stuff? We all have perceptions of what's going on in these nice areas.
You're funny. You're so funny. Absolutely. Absolutely. I have my tribe there and everywhere. I mean, when I first, I haven't shared my whole story. What basically happened for me is I was a research psychologist. So I wasn't a clinical psychologist. Though people would always think that I did, you know, I didn't do therapy with people. That wasn't my original training. And after my intuition opened up and I started getting the information for people that I was getting, I thought, geez, I'm doing counseling right now. And I think because I was in that left brain world for so long, I felt like I got to go back to school and I got to get a license. And I'm really glad I did that for a couple reasons. One, it gave me a solid foundation of counseling tools, skills, boundaries, all of those things that I think is super helpful for a healer or helper to have, be it a coach or, you know, a therapist. It doesn't matter, but I'm so glad that I got that information. And then of course, it helped me build my practice. So when I first started practicing, you know, I had to get a license, you have to accrue supervised hours. So when I was doing my supervised hours, though I was always using my intuition, I did my internship in a middle school and I was using my intuition. But of course, I wasn't talking to middle schoolers about spirit guides or reincarnation, right? Because that would not be what, you know, in the job description. And so I was I was using my intuition because I think any good clinician does, or any great actor does, or any great innovator does, because intuition is where the gold lies. And trust me, you know, when things are going well, you are using it. But, you know, I didn't advertise. So definitely there are people, and there's still some people that come into my office, you know, that don't know the full range of tools in my toolbox. And that is totally fine. But I would say now, after 11 years of practice, I think I'm going on number 11 now, the majority of people that come into my office come because of what I do. and they come because I combine the, you know, the psychology and the spirituality, and they're open to that and they're interested in that. And I have a lot of clients in Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, you know, Australia, California, like all over the place. But I think, you know, more and more people everywhere are opening up to this. And even
that's
in
what
my
I
10
was
years
gonna
of
say.
Practice, yeah, it's just so many more people are open now than when I started 10 years ago. And that's not, when you think about it, a very long time.
Yeah, it really isn't. I truly feel that the pandemic pushed people into even being more open to these ideas. I'm not even sure it was a time of self-reflection. It was a time of heavy questioning of authority. Yeah. I feel that it just seems that it's becoming more and more mainstream. Do you see a future where you can there are going to be school guidance counselors talking about spirit guides?
That is my sincere hope. And yeah, I think we're heading there. I really, truly do. If you even look at the field of counseling and psychology now, and a lot of the modalities that are coming up, and a lot of like the new kinds of treatments, a lot of them are spirit-based. A lot of them, you know, one of the most well-used therapeutic modalities and one of the most researched is dialectical behavioral therapy. And it's used pretty much in all hospital settings and outpatient settings. And I mean, it's really good stuff. And a lot of people don't know because she didn't wear it on her sleeve, but the person that developed that is also a Buddhist monk. And
interesting.
Yeah. And it's developed with that in mind. And, you know, she talked about when I developed this, we don't use the spirit world word because we didn't want to put people off. We just wanted to get the job done. But I feel like more and more now people are using it. And I've done a lot of trainings in things like internal family. I mean, this is all probably gobbledygook to your listeners, but a lot of treatment modalities, right, that I can get continuing education credits for, which is helpful when you're licensed, they're not afraid to talk about spirit at all. And that spiritual piece is coming up more and more. And that intuition piece is coming up more and more. So I 100% think it's the way of the future in psychology, hopefully someday in medicine and in schools. Absolutely. And we already see tons of mindfulness classes in school. Yoga is starting to get to school. So we are most definitely on that path.
Yeah, I feel in general, people are just, maybe it's not all the way into spirit guides yet.
Yeah.
But I definitely feel that there is strongly, certainly it started with all the anti-bully initiatives. And in general, I mean, everybody talking about Black Lives Matter openly and all these social issues that have now penetrated into, I feel, the classroom. People are having just a broader, more acceptance. I don't know if it's any easier to be a child now than it was back then, but it feels like we're starting to condition society so that it might be.
I think so. I think it's the way of the future. And, you know, you said something else too that I think is so cool about the pandemic, because, you know, I do see some people getting a lot worse through all of this and a lot more into fear and going down some rabbit holes that I choose not to follow them. But I also see a lot of people, because so many things have disrupted and because literally, right, for months of our lives, we had to go inside. I see a lot of people sort of waking up to what really matters to them. You know, making a renewed commitment to pursue things in life that, you know, are more soul driven, that more speak to them, that really matter, to start to question things in their lives that maybe aren't working for them. So I think that even though this was a big shakeup for a lot of us in a very uncomfortable way, I think that we're going to see a lot of gains and a lot of growth on all levels from this experience.
Yes. Amazing. Victoria Shaw, intuitive.com. is where you can find out a lot about Victoria. Also, you have this Facebook group. What's going on in the Facebook group?
Yeah, so this is a joy for me. It is the continuation of my podcast, Intuitive Connection. And it's just a Facebook group where I do a lot of teaching. I sometimes do free live readings. It's a lot of, you know, opportunity for connection and community. And again, it's that place where if this speaks to you, if you want to start to tap into your intuition, if you want to start to understand understand and tap into that broader perspective of life, here's a safe space to start to do that and surround yourself with other people who are on that path. And I'm having a blast there. It's so much fun. And I also, you know, we'll have all the guests from the podcast, you know, in the group. So it's just a really nice way to get, you know, as a podcaster, sometimes we put the message out there and then it just kind of sets, and it's nice to have that more interactive experience too.
So at the end of the day, if somebody is deciding, hey, look, I'm having an issue in my life. I'm not sure who to go to. I'm not sure what kind of professional help to seek. Why should you go with an intuitive psychotherapist versus a regular? What is your intuition for anyone listening out there that's going, you know what, I need to address this stuff. I just don't know how far down the rabbit hole I can go.
Yeah, no, it's perfect. First of all, it is my belief that anyone who's doing healing and helping work well is already using their intuition, whether they recognize it or not. So always go to someone that makes you feel good, makes you feel heard. Follow your own intuition to, you know, finding that relationship that works for you. And that can change sometimes over the course of your life. So, you know, I even find that with my own clients, right? We grow, we change, we need different things and different people at different times. But really, anyone who does this work well is already using their intuition. So, you know, you got that covered in a certain extent. Then if you feel more curiosity and, you know, the kind of stuff we're talking about just lights you up and you're like, yeah, I want to do that, then by all means, reach out to someone like me, because that means that you're ready for it. And that, you know, again, that's your spirit, your soul saying, hey, this might be useful right now. So, you know, I always leave it to listeners and to people out there. You'll know what speaks to you. You'll know what makes sense. And yeah, sometimes we have these belief systems that, you know, it can't be possible that somebody could help me if they talk to spirit guides. Then maybe, you know, I'm not your person.
Right.
Definitely not your man. But again, I think that, you know, we all find the people, you know, that are meant to serve us and meant to help us. And it's just about falling into that, setting that intention, and then allowing your intuition to guide you where you need to go.
Yes. Victoria Shaw, Intuitive Connection with Victoria Shaw. You can hear it on all the podcast platforms, as well as VictoriaShawIntuitive.com. And if you're listening, she's healed the people of Westport. Just remember that. that is a strong credential right there. Now, Victoria, this has been amazing. I really appreciate the conversation. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a blast.
Victoria Shaw. She nailed it, didn't she? Now look, does that make me a believer? Who knows? Does it matter? Who cares? Actually, I'm sure you care a little bit. Now look, I will say, I think the thing I took away from this episode was this split between schizophrenic experiences and enlightened experiences when it comes to seeing things that aren't there. That was the first time I've ever heard that distinction, really thought about it. Do you have a positive imaginary friend in your life? Is it COVID? Do you even have friends anymore? Well, I'm sure that if you don't, and that's something you're struggling with, Victoria Shaw Intuitive is the right person for you. Yes. Maybe the big reveal of all of this is that this podcast I created is just so I could have friends again. Oh, don't go down that rabbit hole. Oh gosh. Jerry, what do you think about that? Jerry's nodding. Thank you all for listening to Open Loops. Again, if you love the show, give a review in Apple Podcasts. Greatly appreciated. And look, we'll talk soon. Love ya.